My name's Andy Gordon. I came on a working holiday to New Zealand in 2009 and kind of never left. Well, I did leave and then I ended up coming back time and time again. So basically in the end I settled here.
So what was it about New Zealand appealed to you?
Well, New Zealand, when people ask me, I always say it's a nicer version of England, basically. It's less people, friendlier people. It's a nice, the less people a country has, that's always a nice thing, and lots of nice nature, beaches and good weather.
It was almost like a kind of 1960s England, and many of the kind of attitudes of the locals were very much more collegiate than this kind of divided country and this divide and rule kind of Britain has now become, certainly England anyway, and the South particularly. But anyway, I've got you on today to talk about this story from about a month ago about Australian undercover police who were feeding an autistic 13-year-old's fixation with the Islamic State. Now, when you sent me this, I immediately thought of the Facebook grooming of Shamima Begum and her three friends. And I've also been recently watching Al Jazeera's documentary about the Mossad operations in Turkey. And it's quite clear that many of these youngsters are actually being, I mean, this is a 13-year-old, for God's sake, are actually being groomed using Facebook, and there it doesn't seem to be very much going on. In fact, we've even got some case here in Britain of a young kid that was actually groomed and eventually committed suicide on Facebook. And so there is a Facebook seems to be a centre for a lot of these things. But can you just introduce us to this case in Australia?
Basically, this 13-year-old boy, he had autism and he had a low IQ, and he obviously made contact with somebody on the internet, and they were the ones who kind of got him obsessed with Islamic State. So it's kind of I feel like it's a they entrapped him in this world, and they got him to take pictures of himself.
So what, sorry, was it a Muslim child?
I'm not, there's no pictures of him, so we can't say exactly, but I feel like he must have maybe some background, Muslim background.
So they're not really
I
saying much
feel like.
about him, which is obvious because he's a 13-year-old, they might not want to. His name is Thomas Carrick, allegedly. I mean, I'm not sure even if they would give his proper name as a 13-year-old. But anyhow, look, sorry, I interrupted you. So he may be Islamic, he may be not. But they got him interested in this, the caliphate kind of idea.
And basically, I mean, it's actually his parents who, because he, I mean, this is a 13-year-old boy. He asked his mum to buy him ingredients to make a bomb. So that's how ridiculous it is, really. And his parents actually went to the police, and the police were actually very helpful, the local police, and they got him in touch with a local mosque and the leaders of that mosque to try and explain to him, about Islam and these things, and it was going very well apparently, but he kept making contact online with some undercover police, and the undercover police in the end sent him to a more extreme guy outside of Australia, and this then it really escalated, and they basically persuaded him to take a picture of himself with his mum's kitchen knife, with felt tip pen on it, saying, jihad and all these slogans, ISS, and with that picture, I mean, he was in his school uniform with his hood up, with a hoodie on. With that picture, the police used that to raid his house and basically bring charges against him. And they obviously took his computer, and they used all the conversations as evidence in court. This is what we're dealing with online, and this is a sort of warning, I'd say, because it just shows that anybody interacting online is potentially setting themselves up to be arrested, you know, or, you know, that would what we're really talking about is the devil's chessboard, isn't it? You know, these people can use you how they want. They could arrest you, or they could use you in some kind of operation, false flag, or whatever it may be.
Thing here, which we mustn't skip over, is these police. So you've got police on the one hand giving good advice, local police, and then you've got other police who must have surely thought that, well, we can do this to this 13-year-old guy and no one will ever discover that we're police.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, what we're talking about here is we're talking about the intelligence services, aren't we? You know, in Australia, and obviously the person abroad, I would suggest, you know, we don't know, but it's probably from the US or UK, you know, and this is what they're doing. So, I mean, even in just everyday activism, even now, you know, even with this Israeli situation, you know, you have to be careful what you do say online, because someone could grab that and use it against you to take your job away, or whatever it is, you know. And already recently, we've just seen, you know, some prosecutions from, of all people, you know, the rugby world, you know, because I don't know if you heard, in the World Cup, you know, this referee got abused so badly that he's left his job and all the rest of it. And now World Rugby has made prosecutions in Europe and here in New Zealand against people who trolled him online. You know, so this is the way we're heading. And what they're going to use this for is, obviously, they're going to use this to bring restrictions in on the internet. And we are heading towards a world probably in 10, 20 years time where you're going to need some kind of ID to use the internet and to write things on the internet.
But yeah, you know, but at look, the moment, hang on, we've missed out something important here. And that is that these internet trolls, they could potentially be bad actors. They may be people who are actually, they've got a political agenda. They're on there to send, say, I don't know, some celebrity a whole load of hate mail in order for that to almost make a news story. In other words, to make a story out of this. And they're not maybe even genuine people. But the other thing is, I mean, if someone wants to criticise a referee, and tell them that they think they've made the wrong decision and maybe use a few expletives, I mean, surely that's normal.
Well, you would have thought so, but then obviously the ones that they have prosecuted could be crossing a line. I'm not 100% sure, but you're dead right that it could be. You know, we've just seen recently as well with the Taylor Swift porn. There's going to be a lot more deep fakes, and you know that could be, like you say, it could be a setup because they want to try and push us towards, you know, control of the internet, more control of the internet. And I know even this year. Apparently in the EU, I mean, the UK is very good. We've resisted European IDs and we've resisted the EU currency. But the rest of Europe, for a long, long time, they've had European IDs. And this year, they've brought in digital IDs for Europe. And so basically, you go to any country in Europe if you've got one of these IDs, and instantly you can have your tax number, you can pay taxes. They've got your fingerprints, they've got your eye color, your color of your eyes, you know, so that they're only one step away from introducing that ID to use the internet to write comments on web pages, you know, and apparently it's all for security, because in Europe they're going to use that. So when you sign up for an app, instead of putting all your information in, you just put your ID number in, your digital ID number, and the government knows who you are, and it's all meant to be secure, but the website owners do not know 100% who you are. So this is the world we're heading towards, I'd say.
Thomas Carrick, this 13-year-old lad, was passed from person to person. So once someone who was not too extreme had become his so-called friend on social media, he was then passed on to someone who was far more extreme. But all of these people apparently were undercover officers. Now, this just sounds utterly, completely abusive. You've got, well, as they say, you know, this is not your local police. They did the sensible thing, the right thing, which was to go and, you know, talk about this to the local mosque and, you know, to normal Muslims, not to these internet troll intelligence police maniacs or whoever they were. But Thomas was investigated and charged with two terror offences by this thing called the Joint Counter-Terror Team, who'd been grooming him. And it comprises the Australian Federal Police, so that's not the individual states, that's the national cops, and Victoria Police, who are the more local cops, and also ASIO members. So do you know who this ASIO is?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure who they are, but I mean, they've got all these anti-terror organizations, haven't they? And, you know, the intelligence operations now, it is changed a lot because it is more predominantly online. You know, they don't need to send people out into the field anymore. They've probably got, you know, these offices filled with hundreds of people, you know, looking for these people, radicals and so on. But I think this case, it really demonstrates, you know, how they can actually radicalize people themselves, where these people would probably, if it's left to their own devices, it would just peter out. You know, the parents would deal with it, the local police would deal with it, the local mosque would deal with it. But, you know, they're kind of inventing these problems. And I think with that 13-year-old boy, it really reveals that, because, you know, when we see terrorists being arrested and these cases coming up on the news, they always have the picture of the guy with the knife, you know, with a slogan, with a banner. And this just shows that they are trying to get those pictures as evidence, you know. And when we see those pictures on the news, we think straight away, oh, brilliant, they've got another terrorist. But that guy would probably never make that picture if it wasn't for these, you know, intelligence agencies egging them on.
Well, this is the point that ASIO actually stands for Australian Security Intelligence Organisation, and it is the intelligence service of Australia, their version of MI5. So they're working with the state police, they're working with the federal police, and it says it's the agency responsible for the protection of the country and its citizens from espionage. But actually what's going on is they're doing grooming of terrorists, because maybe they don't have any terrorists, so they've got to find terrorists to make some work for themselves.
Yeah, that's exactly right, I think. Yeah, so I mean, and the other thing, I've been looking into the connection with the Order of Nine Angles and the March 15th terrorist attack in New Zealand, Christchurch.
Okay, and this is the mosque massacre. Yep. I think, wasn't that 2018 or 2019?
2019, I think.
2019, yeah, that's right. The year before the, we were there actually, and the year before the pandemic kicked off. And this was a horrific, like, I think it was 54 worshippers were killed in Christchurch in these two mosques by this chappy Brenton Tarrant, who was bizarrely filmed the whole thing on Facebook. And then because there was some evidence that he wasn't doing it alone, that he did seem to have some help, it seems, for that reason, and for obviously the reason that, you know, on the film is people being murdered, the New Zealand government actually made it illegal to possess this video. But actually, of course, it's quite important for journalists to be able to do so and to scrutinise it. Yeah. But anyway, so what do you think is the link between 09A and the mosque massacres?
Yeah, well, I've been looking at the 09A, and it seems, you know, for me, it could be a very similar operation as it's kind of the other side of the chessboard, you know, the more far right side rather than the Islamic sort of state side. And it could also be an intelligence operation, this 09A, because, I mean, it's like you said, as the UK government seems very reluctant to ban the 09A. They seem quite open to having it around. And also, you know, you don't hear much about it. You know, if you look online, there is a lot of stuff out there about it, you know. And in the UK, I think there's four or five cases of young men who, you know, got in far too deep and did end up, you know, murdering someone or, you know, or several people, you know. So it's definitely out there and it's definitely real.
Yeah, I mean, can I just say, because it's they definitely target the military, the Order of the Nine Angles as well. And there was a case where somebody who was part of this group was in the military. I think it was in a US Army unit, and was trying to organize an attack against his own unit, and he was discovered and arrested, etc. It's called by the BBC a UK Nazi Satanist group, and campaigners have been urging for a long time now for the Home Office to ban it, but the Home Office have been resisting that in Britain. Order of the Nine Angles is actually a very good BBC article about this from 2020, the year after the mosque massacre, where Daniel de Simone on the BBC website says a British neo-Nazi Satanist group should be outlawed by the government as a terrorist organisation. Hope Not Hate has used its annual State of Hate report to call for the Order of Nine Angles 09A to be banned. The Home Office said the list of proscribed terrorist groups was kept under review. And one of the groups last week, which was added to it, Sonnenkrieg Division, was influenced by the 09A's Nazi Satanist ideology. So they are banning some groups which are influenced by the Order of the Nine Angles and picking up ideas and diabolical ideology from them, but not Order of the Nine Angles themselves.
Yeah, well, the Order of the Nine Angles is, you know, they encourage people who are interested to join the military, to join the police, you know, anywhere where you could potentially murder someone, because basically in the Order of the Nine Angles, to the first step to being an official member is to literally murder someone, you know, and once you've murdered them, you're supposed to say a satanic prayer above their body, you know, which is pretty disturbing. And so this is what they are, and they are accelerationists, you know, because even I was looking at the manifesto of Brenton Tarrant, and he has got a heading there, accelerationism, and you know their belief is let me just quote it here, it's stability and comfort are the enemies of revolutionary change. So and this ties in perfectly with what the Order of the Nine Angles believe, you know. And they've also got another esoteric idea of the hero, and they've got several steps in becoming a hero, you know. So what it is you have to travel, well, the way the Order of the Nine Angles interpret this is you have to travel alone around the world to many different countries, you know, and once you return, you know, you can reap the rewards, you know, you will become a hero, you know, and you will have learned all of this knowledge and so on, you know, this is what they believe. And, you know, that on this journey, it could be possible, let's say, to murder someone easier than if you're in your own country, because you could, you know, make a hasty escape. And this is the ideas they're trying to put out there and create chaos and accelerate us to the, you know, the end of the world almost, you know. And this is their idea, you know, and they want to try and you know, they're trying to do blood sacrifice, you know. So a lot of this comes from kind of Mayan culture, you know, of blood sacrifice, and you're going to have a demon come to you and possess you, you know. So they one idea is that you should stay up all night, you know, in nature, and they're big fans of nature, you know. You should stay in nature all night, and you're trying to open a stargate, they believe, and bring down a demon from the heavens above, or stars, you know. So they got some very funny ideas, you know.
I mean, I think there is a genuine sort of appeal of like spending the night out under the stars, especially when it's not pouring with rain and it's reasonably warm, like in a nice New Zealand summer, and you haven't got any kind of wild giant cats prowling around, that sort of thing. But so you can see this is quite appealing. But I think it's important just to stress that this is a very real organisation, and it's not some sort of fantasy. I mean, ABC News reported just last year in March 23. An American soldier, Ethan Meltzer, Ethan Meltzer, he was described as the enemy within, and he was sentenced for a jihadist plot. He was an ex-army private, and he plotted an attack on his fellow soldiers. So he was sentenced to 45 years in prison. A former army private described as the enemy within because he plotted with satanic neo-Nazi group known as the Order of the Nine Angles to kill his fellow soldiers. He pleaded guilty to three counts, aiding and abetting the attempt to murder US servicemen, providing material support and resources to terrorists, and illegally transmitting transmitting national defense information. He attempted to plan a jihadist attack on his own army unit in the days leading up to deployment in Turkey, sending sensitive details to other members of the UK-based Order of the Nine Angles. The attack never came to fruition. And in May 2020, with the intent that US service members be killed, he said, "I disclosed sensitive information about my army unit's upcoming deployment to individuals I communicated with online in the messaging app Telegram. I'm sorry," he said, "I regret every single thing I did." But the fact of the matter is, he was most definitely part of this Order of the Nine Angles.
Yeah. So, and I mean, with Tarrant, I mean, we know that he was in contact with many, many far right groups, you know, so there's a very high possibility that he'd have come into at least one group, which is, you know, having contact with Order of the Nine Angles. Because another thing with the Order of the Nine Angles is you're not really meant to tell anybody. So within far right groups, some members may be part of the Order of the Nine Angles and the rest of the group wouldn't know. But, you know, obviously you're going to be spreading this around with your mates, you know, you're going to be telling them, "Oh, look up this website or so-and-so," you know, and they can easily get into it that way. And with the whole hero thing, you know, we know that Brenton Tarrant traveled the world, you know, and that is a clear indication. It's one of the key things with Order of the Nine Angles, you know, to follow that path, you know. And he'd be one of the few people who could actually do it, because he was left an inheritance to do that. And not only was he traveling, and he was also donating obviously to a lot of these far right groups, so we know he's involved in this this world. And just looking at some of the symbols on his gun, I mean, one I just wanted to pick up on was he had scrawled on the gun is Vienna 1683. And this is something that I think people don't often talk about, is this was a battle where the first time where the European Christians all worked together to take out the Muslims, the Persian Muslims, you know, out of Vienna. And this all happened in 1683 on September the 11th. And it's something that people don't talk about. I never hear it talked about much, is, you know, the whole idea of 9/11, the Twin Towers, is kind of a revenge attack from the Muslims, you know, onto the free world for the Vienna 1683 attack. And it's something that I never hear much about, you know. And they've even made a film in the far right world. There's a film called... I think it's called The Siege or something like this, and it's all about this battle, and they worship this battle, you know, the far right Christians, let's say. So yeah, it's very, very interesting that,
well,
you have that.
I mean, look, I mean, I think that there is this idea that the Knights Templar were Christians. There's also, I don't really think they were basically uncovered as a satanic group by the French king Philip the Fair. And this whole kind of supposed massive battle between Islam and Judaism and Christianity seems to me to be a sort of being cooked up over the centuries in order to, I mean, certainly it happened genuinely in the Crusades, but it seems to have been sort of working towards where we are now with the attempt to set the Muslim world against the Christian and the Jewish world. The only thing is, these Christians and these Jews often don't seem to be actually following their own faiths. They seem to be kind of Gnostic versions of their own faith. But anyway, look, Fascinating, all these links between Tarrant. I wonder if it's just before we get off of him, I wonder if you think there's anything more we need to know, because one of those things that fascinated me about Tarrant was all these things scrawled on his guns that he was using, on his bag. There was the Nazi black sun, which is also a satanic symbol, on there too. So yeah, I mean, quite clearly there's some sort of link to this Nazi satanic group. Whether it's the Order of Nine Angles, it's difficult to know. But what else is anything else on those scribblings that is worth, you think, registering? Because I mean, there's a lot of information, and none of it got really explained at the time at all, or even looked at.
No, that's right. So I mean, obviously you've mentioned the black sun there. I mean, that's that is obviously far right Christian Aryan symbol, and that's the whole backstory with that one. That symbol is to do with the Hollow Earth theory, and obviously the Nazis believed that they were from this Aryan race which lived in a cave or under the earth, in the earth's crust somewhere, you know. And the black sun represents the molten center of the planet Earth, you know. So yeah, that's very interesting. And yeah, I haven't got actually any details on the other symbols there, because it's actually very hard to find pictures of his weapons, you know, so you can't see.
Yeah, well, they seem exactly to have been disappearing off the internet a bit. And also there's quite a lot of names of these various, you know, crusaders, people that have fought the Muslims over the years. So you're clearly trying to cook that up. But then I also, yeah, I mean,
one other thing is, I mean, you mentioned the Templars there, the Christian Templars. And yeah, there's a book called Born in Blood, which is a very good book, which actually links how the Templars actually became the Freemasons. And yeah, they were sort of Gnostic Christian group. But then, you know, the whole Gnostic thing, it's really then they're not really Christians. You know, they're kind of working against the church in many ways, but they like to pretend that they are Christians, you know. And
that's just clear. That's a fantastic book. So good. Thank you for bringing it up. And if anyone has got book suggestions on these sorts of topics, please do let me know. I'll be happy to share them with people. So it's called Born in Blood, The Lost Secrets of Freemasonry by John Robinson. And, you know, there's an absolutely fantastic amount of stuff in there. One of the most interesting for me, just a memorable thing from the book, is the this thing about the lodge. You know, we have these Masonic lodges. Where does this word come from? And he explains, as a Freemason himself, that the origin of it was in between the extinguishing of the Templars and the creation of Freemasonry around the time of the English Civil War. The Templars were, to begin with, were based in Scotland, but they had to have safe houses because the Templars had been banned. So they still were Templars. And even back in May 2023, when I was over in Tomar, a Templar place just near where the Bilderbergers were meeting in Lisbon in May. It went to a beautiful Orthodoxy, I think it was an Orthodoxy or a Templar service anyway, and absolutely beautiful singing in this church in Tomar. And the guy that was sitting there at the desk welcoming people, we were still there when most people had left, but I had a chat with him. I said, are you a Templar? And he looked at me, and it's quite obvious this is something he's not allowed to admit it. And he said, oh, I can't say, you know, but he's obviously, yes, you are. So this is still going on out there somewhere. But the point is that the safe houses were called lodges, and that's where the whole Masonic lodge develops from. So, yeah, thanks for recommending that book. Also, he talks there about how the Peasants' Revolt in England was set up by the Templars as a ruse to get a lot of their property back, because a lot of their property had been confiscated, the temple in London, etc., other places, and handed over to the Knights Hospitaller. And so, yeah, this link between the Templars and the Masons is a really important thing to understand, I think. So thanks for bringing that up as well. What about the people like Peter Thiel? I mean, this is getting back, I suppose, to the satanic angle here, because he and various other people, these billionaires, are now deciding that it's perfectly normal and OK to be drinking human blood in order to help them to live longer, and they're saying it's just very healthy. What do you make of that one?
Yeah, well, I think that's actually, it's always been a cultist thing, you know, and there could be some truth to it. I wouldn't really know. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously, this has been handed down through the generations, and you know, the people that are into occultism and esoteric knowledge, you know, they're trying these things out. So there could be some truth to it, but if it extends your life, you know, well above 100, I have my doubts. So I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, so Peter Thiel, according to Vanity Fair, wants to inject himself rather than just to drink it, having young people's blood. Silicon Valley billionaire sees blood transfusions as the pathway to life extension. Now, doesn't he have a little bolt hole over in New Zealand? This sort of thing is when people have got far, far, far too much money, like Thiel, the creator of PayPal and various other, I mean, he was one of the financiers of Facebook. He just seems to be almost like a kind of finance god. And also the BBC is quite open in one of its articles. It talks about this too, that human blood is being drunk by some of these, you know. Anyway, go on.
So that Thiel, he's actually it's not just human blood that they're interested in. They're interested in this bat blood. So there's some bats that have these properties where they live, you know, a very, very long time. And I know that Thiel is putting money into some universities here to do research and things into that in New Zealand. And also what's very interesting is that he decided that the lockdown rules didn't apply to him in New Zealand. And actually he is the only person, I think, to manage to arrive in New Zealand on, I think he arrived on a sailing boat because he was spending lockdown. He's spending the COVID period somewhere in the Pacific, on a Pacific island somewhere. And and obviously he's a citizen or a resident of New Zealand. So he's an interesting character.
Yeah. And part of this kind of religion of transhumanism, it seems. And so-called, what they call is medical sanguinarians. They claim regular shots of blood relieve them of fatigue, headaches and stomach pains. For many, real life vampirism is a taboo. Over the last few decades, it's come to be associated with gruesome murders, such as the notorious case of Rod Ferrell in the US, a deluded killer apparently inspired by fantasy role playing game. When people talk about self-identified vampires, a lot of times these horrible images come to mind, says DJ Williams, a sociologist at Idaho State University. So the community has been closed and suspicious of outsiders. Well, quite right too. But anyway, it just shows that this Order of the Nine Angles thing, I mean, and this whole idea of like drinking human blood is not a fantasy. It's going on in the world today. In fact, I don't recall the name of it, but I know that there's a big wealthy US businessman that makes a big thing about this. Yeah, I'm just injecting myself with my son's blood once every month or something. So this is so-called becoming normal. Anyway, do you just want to say, I don't know if you've got a blog or anything or anything that you think is useful, particularly with links to the Order of the Nine Angles and Tarot, Andy?
There's a very good, I mean, the thing is, a lot of the stuff you can't find anymore for some reason about Tarrant and the Christchurch thing. But there is a very good article from Time magazine, which I really recommend. If you can find that, then definitely read that. It's all about his the club that he was a member of down here, and gives some insight into that.
Is that the Gun Club?
Yeah, the Gun Club. So
yeah, I mean, this is amazing that, you know, he's reported he was. I mean, this so often happens with these terror attacks. The intelligence services are informed, the local police are informed about this nutter with a gun, and then nothing is done about it. Unbelievable. Anyway, What was, you mentioned a podcast last time. Do you want to just plug that again?
Yeah, the podcast is called The Secret Life is Best. And that's about the origins of the English Empire and the intelligence agencies, English intelligence agency.
So what do they talk about? So that, well, the British, yeah, okay, English Empire. They talk about, yeah, John Dee.
They do, yeah. So actually, they do talk about John Dee because he's obviously one of the main original occultists, and he like the Order of the Nine Angles, John Dee believed in this idea of travel and discovery in occultism. So he traveled the libraries of Europe and even the Middle East looking for esoteric knowledge. But that podcast is more about Sir Francis Bacon, which for me, like, he was the one who really put in place the modern system that we're living in, the intelligence world that we're living in, you know. So you have to kind of fill in between the lines of that podcast and do your own research, but it's really, really interesting.
Anyway, Andy Gordon, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, cheers, Tony.